You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hello and welcome to the 33rd episode of the Pirate Rugby Podcast. We're creeping up on 950 YouTube subscribers, so a huge thanks to everyone for tuning in. Help us get to that big 1,000 mark. We're almost there. No Ender again this evening, but not to worry, I've got two incredibly able deputies that I'll tell you just about in a second. Before I tell you to hit the Linktree link in the description box below, you'll find a link to our Substack in there, where we've just done an article introducing people who maybe want to get into rugby stats, all of the different websites that they can use to get into it. If you've ever wondered where I get my stats from on Twitter or things like that, it's all listed in there, and I can tell you the strong points and the weak points for each website. So don't forget to check us out. You can also find us on TikTok, where we're uploading our short form content every day. And of course, if you're watching this on YouTube, leave a lovely comment. And if you listen to this on Apple, especially Apple people, we've only got 2 5-star reviews. Okay, Apple people, review us now, please, and give us 5 stars. Thank you. Right. Now I shall introduce our wonderful guest. I've got Harley again. I won't introduce him very much because he was here last week. Good evening, Harley.
Good evening. Nice to be back.
And making her podcasting debut, I have got, you may know her from Twitter, the meme creator of the women's game. It is Rugby Julia. Julia, welcome to podcasting.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Okay, we'll jump straight into international weather check is the first bit. So me and Harley haven't got a very interesting international weather check, because for all of our South African and Australian and American listeners, we're essentially in the same place. It may be 200 miles apart, but Harley, it's in the Midlands fine today.
It was very nice then, with some very heavy showers down in Cardiff and on the channel. And it's a bit mizzly now. I'm back at my mum's in Barry. So, you know, very, very typical April weather for this part of the world.
Yeah, April showers. And Julia, where are you coming to us from, and what is the weather like?
I am in Northern Virginia, right outside of Washington, D.C., and we are also experiencing some pretty bad storming. If you see any coverage across the world later on, there's a big storm system coming through just a few states away. I think we're getting the dredges of it, but otherwise, yeah, pretty typical spring for this region.
Okay, good to know. We're learning all about the different climates all around the world through this podcast. This, the little extras that people didn't think they were getting. Anyway, we're going to go into moment of the week now. So my moment of the week is simply Romain Untermaak and Antoine Dupont being united once again at Toulouse at the weekend in their tight victory over Pau. It being French rugby, there was something weird about it, that Antoine Dupont was wearing 10 and Romain Untermaak was wearing 21, which is the wrong numbers. But they made it work, and they managed to combine and get themselves a victory in the end over Pau, who have overachieved this season, but the real Toulouse are about to be back. And Blair Kinghorn apparently is fit again this weekend, so it could be him playing a fullback for them in the Champions Cup. Harley, what was your moment of the week?
So on the tweet before we put out, I put out three random clips from the Cardiff game against Munster, and I'm actually picking none of them because my actual moment of the week was Molly Reardon coming off the bench for Wales to get her debut cap. So anyone who's listened to the Cardiff Central podcast knows we sort of adopted Gwalior Lightning as our team, as we were based out there, and we're huge fans of us converted scrum half playing hooker. And actually, she showed when she came on the bench, not only were her darts brilliant, but she was shown some fantastic passing off the base as well, which, you know, could be a very good attacking weapon if it's used. And yeah, we're just very proud of our little Molly. I say little, she definitely beat me up.
Yeah, she needed that's to. A lovely one. That's a lovely one. Julia, what was your moment of the week?
Man, that's a really good one. I should have thought of mine better. Mine is also, I'm glad we're doing a front row love moment. Mine honestly is just the whole game that Vittoria Vecchini had. I know we're going to get into it, but she got player of the match, totally deserved it. What a performance from Italy. I know we're going to cover it, but honestly, my moment was just watching her get that medal.
Yeah, fantastic. That's a great one. I'm going to read some listeners one now. So David Lawrence, good evening, good morning, good afternoon, David. Says the guy who was surreptitiously trying to smoke a cigarette in the crowd during the Fijian Drua game, for people who haven't seen the clips, it was absolutely hosing down in Fiji this weekend and they were all splashing about in the puddles, and there was one guy under a brolly having a cheeky fag, but he he got caught by the cameras and he looked quite sheepish about it. But if there's a funny moment, David's posted the photo of it on Twitter, so if anyone wants to go and see it, that's there. James Reese, don't know anything about him, says Sam Parry scoring a belter for the Ospreys. Of course, a belter for the Ospreys is a 5-meter driving maul. But we love mauls anyway.
In fairness, this was actually, I will defend Mr. Ospreys, James, here for Sam Parry, because it was from about 20 meters out and it was a break. It was off at the end of a break, which is the fastest I've ever seen Sam Parry run.
It was probably an intercept. Moving on. Leslie said, Glasgow beating the Scarlets. Leslie, it's been fun having you on the podcast in the past, but that's now finished for slagging off my Scarlets team. And the other moment that I think, Julia, you had was you discovered the Stade Francais online store this weekend.
I guess trial by fire from you. Thank you so much. I ended up spending too much time on it. I did find out that I could get full cookware from a rugby team, which I didn't know. And now I feel kind of let down by the teams that I support. So if the Bristol Bears could get on that, I'll talk to you offline.
Not Wildcast or Make Their Kit. But that's a separate conversation. La Vie en Rose, actually. Yeah. If anyone hasn't checked out the Stade Francais online store, please do. Just cheer yourself up for 5 minutes. It's incredible.
If you want a really cool knife, and I know it sounds like I'm pulling your leg, but go check it out.
Yeah, it's a very reasonable.
That is far too tempting.
It's a very reasonable 100 full euros. Yeah.
Not including shipping. And I bought things from France. There is shipping fees. Thanks.
I'll be honest, you'd be embarrassed to hear some of the noise I actually own.
It feels like a story for another day, Harley. Right. So let's learn more about our guests. So. Julia, you're very active on Twitter. Like I said, you post your memes and you talk a lot about the women's game. And you were telling me earlier about how you're unusual in the world of rugby is that you only really follow the women's game. You don't really watch the men's at all. So just tell us about how you got into rugby. I'm always interested in hearing how Americans get into rugby and just the joy that you take from the sport.
Absolutely. So, yeah, as listeners can tell, I am not a member or a native of any of the Six Nations. I am American. And, you know, as most fans know, our progress for the sport has been a little bit different than in the home countries and Australia and New Zealand. For us, we got rugby a bit later than all of those nations. And for a long time, especially for women of a certain age like me, we didn't have a lot of opportunities to get into rugby until really university age. I was lucky. My parents met and my mom was raised in Europe, went to school in England, and I got to spend some summers there. That was where I kind of saw rugby when I was of the right age to see it around 13 or 14. Came back and there wasn't really any options to play, not really in high school, but certainly I went to go find it in college. And as we were discussing earlier, you know, one cool thing about rugby and probably the thing that I love most about it, other than the sporting side of it, is for lack of a better phrase, rugby was kind of a counterculture sport in America, at least when I was coming up. It's a place that's really welcoming to queer women. It's a place that they could congregate. We also, you know, if there are any other Americans, we also have softball. But if you didn't want to play softball, there was rugby. And that was really how I came upon it. And I've been really heartened to hear stories from other women who are my age and even younger than me that came to it for the same reason. It's certainly why I love it the most still. And I played through university. I went to Virginia Commonwealth University in Richmond, Virginia. Not a great school, don't need to look it up. but I went to university, played there, liked it so much. And because of the way that timing worked out, I got to go play in Australia for a season. And from there, it's pretty much the only thing that I've followed this closely. In terms of the men's game, being an American, the sport is not there for the men at the moment, at least not at the national level. And, you know, not being in the area where all of the big men's teams are, I just never really got exposed to it. It'd be great if it was easier to watch it even now, but for now, we'll take what we can get.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for sharing that. So let's jump straight into the weekend's action then. And we're going to go in a weird order, to be fair. We're going to start with what my opinion of the game of the weekend was, Ireland versus Italy, which was a very interesting game. So Italy obviously started the Six Nations with a typical encounter with the Red Roses, and Ireland started it with a very encouraging encounter out in France. That the scoreline maybe didn't say it was encouraging, but anybody who watched it would say it was encouraging. So my question to you, Julia, is this: did Italy win that game or did Ireland lose it?
That's a really good question. And actually, that was the number one note that I have in my notes here. I feel that neither Italy won that nor Ireland lost it so much as Ireland had at the end, or Italy rather, had the better game in the end. There were real bright spots for both teams. There's a lot that you could say about the back office stuff for both those teams. They aren't getting proper funding, they're getting the proper administrative support, and I think at the end of the day, for Italy to come into Ireland, in fact, I have here, it was the historic first victory for Italy in Ireland, and, you know, for both having kind of a shaky start, in the end, Italy had the better game, but I agree with you, simply not by huge margins.
Yeah, it felt like it took Italy 20 minutes to get going. Ireland had all that possession and opportunity in Italy's 22, just couldn't make a dent. And then it even felt like Italy had a slow start to the second half as well, and they just sprang into life. They started making those incredible line breaks and just getting over the line. Do you think, will Ireland be kicking themselves? Where do you think it went wrong for Ireland?
See, that was what surprised me, though, was that inconsistency, especially when the week before we saw Italy hold England off for 40 minutes at all for any score. We know that they can come out of the gate strong, and, you know, it's okay for any team at any point to have a shaky start to a game. But like you said, we were looking at least 20 minutes where it wasn't clicking. Perhaps there was some luck that it also wasn't clicking for Ireland, but, you know, to that end, Ireland has a lot more holding it back than Italy does. Ireland has played with injuries. There are internal problems. You know, just confirming my notes. It's hard to say. I don't want to say that it was, you know, all downhill for Ireland. There were a lot of bright spots. You know, they did hold them to 17 points at least, but otherwise,
yeah, it just felt like they couldn't snap into anything. I thought you might have to help me with the name. Ireland's 13. I did look it up during the game. Had an absolutely fantastic game. Also, Sam Monaghan, the second row, had an absolutely incredible game. Just the amount of meters, amount of carries that she made.
You were showing her stats actually. No, I was hoping you would talk a little bit about that because she had an absolutely monster game.
Yeah, she. I'll have to go back and watch it again. I can only assume that she was dropping back into the backfield or something because she ran for 150 meters and got 40 meters over the gain line, which is kind of like fullbacky sort of stats. Someone who would hang back in the backfield and then run back to the line. So I have to check out and see exactly where those stats came from. I will say that finding stats, and I said this last week as well, finding stats on the women's game is tricky. I think, Harley, were you looking, trying to find stats for women's matches earlier and finding it difficult?
Yeah, so, I mean, the only place, which actually, to be fair to the Six Nations competition, actually, the stats they have on the game, it's the same for the senior men's, the under-20s men, and the world women, which is quite nice. It gives you rough ideas. I'm not too fussed on the actual player stats they use, but like general ones for the game are quite, they're presented fairly well. So they'll do meters, game, post-contact meters, then kick and kick meters. One thing I quite like is they also distinguish between purposefully long kicks and tactical kicks, which is quite helpful because it gives you a bit more, saying that you've kicked 30 times, probably made 100 meters, but they're all little dinks over the top. You can say that's a tactical choice, or if they're supposed to be aiming for like the corners, but they've only made 10, 15 meters at a time, then, that's more of an issue with the kicking itself, which is something that when we talk about Wales, I'll probably get into.
Yeah. You were going to say something else there, Julia, sorry, before I interrupted.
Oh, no, I was just thinking that it's really good to have those stats, especially stuff like kicking, because there are aspects of the game, especially for the women, that we're looking to work on, seeing if there are ways that it can be improved via coaching or performance or what can be done. It's been giving me great insight, but like you said, they've been so hard to find. I almost find myself at a loss because I don't have as much experience reading and understanding those stats, just because for a long time couldn't find them. So we found other ways to analyze the game.
Yeah. You just have to be someone like me who prefers numbers to words and finds numbers easier to understand and live with. Moving on to the next game then. Oh no, sorry. Before we move on, Italy's probably the team that I know least about. I probably couldn't tell you very much about their history in the Six Nations. Obviously Italy men's has been at the bottom until recently. Same with Italy women's then. So they're normally the least competitive.
Yeah, honestly, it's Italy and Wales. We know, and I know that we'll go into it much more because we are all Wales fans. So we have a lot to talk about there with this last match. But Italy, I also don't know that much. We have Google Translate now. If you really want to, you can be reading those articles, but they simply don't put out that much about their women. On top of that, of the four of the six nations that are working on professionalization, for a long time, it was really easy to just say Ireland is doing the worst because of all of the internal problems at IRFU. One guy who just wants to hold everything back for women. For a long time, you could say that. Italy, they were having progress. They were kind of matching with the likes of Scotland and Wales, I would say, but recently taken a step back. They haven't expanded the number of professional contracts like the other nations have. The access to it isn't as easy, and they also have the added problem of a lot of their players go and play in France, which is understandable. The club rugby is a higher quality. You can make money there. Your friends are already there. A lot of them have been doing that, but we see the same problem, honestly, that we see with USA rugby, which is just, it's very hard to have a national team when you need to recall people and they need to take flights. It's not as easy as it is somewhere like Wales or Scotland where, yes, the Scotland girls have to drive home from Loughborough or the Wales girls have to drive home from Gloucester or Bristol, but it's not the same.
Well, when it comes to infrastructure in Wales, if you have to drive from Wrexham to Cardiff, that's basically 2 days off work to make that journey.
Yep.
Have to go
anything involving bridges, I have learned, just adds a day.
Yeah. Okay, so moving on to the next game then that we're going to talk about is Scotland versus France. So if you look at the stats of this game, Scotland weren't really in it. And it reminded me a lot of seeing the stats from Ireland versus France, in that Scotland had a lot of ball, but they could not get any territory and they could not win the physical battle with France. And I think France, when you watch them, when you see, like, if you look at the athletes that they've got, they've got arguably the most intimidating athletes in the Six Nations. Of course, the Red Roses are another level, but the French athletes, you look at them like, wow, okay, you are an impressive team. But Scotland gave them a real game. And it wasn't until right at the end that France managed to get more than a score clear. Are France still one of the top teams in women's rugby? Or, because it feels like they're the one that other people are catching up to first.
So I have two thoughts on that. First of all, that's a really good question. I think that is kind of what we're all grappling with right now, because especially after what we saw at WXV and before that at the last World Cup, you know, France are still the third best team in the world, at least on paper. But for example, in this match, you know, first of all, there's a lot to be said to and for Scotland. Their defense was probably the best that we've seen in a really long time. The folks that I was watching it live with were commenting as well, and these are super casual fans, that it's the best that they've seen, you know, for these people since I started making them watch rugby, but even for consummate fans, even just holding the score down to what it ended up being 5-15, I don't remember, and you're the stats guy, so hopefully you will remember, but the scores that we have had for this fixture before have looked quite different. And it is what you said, you know, they, if nothing else, they held them off. Sure, that doesn't sound that impressive. It's not the only thing you want somebody saying about your rugby team after they perform like that. But holding off France is no small thing. It is, like you said, the athletes that they have are intimidating. You know, even Scottish girls know how much support they have, the infrastructure that they have, and also the fact that a lot of them get to play as their jobs. A lot of the Scottish girls still don't. I think there was something to be said, but in terms of is France the current target for a lot of teams? Yes, we've heard Wales say it. We've heard Scotland say it as well. And we know that Australia is looking at them. We'll see more when we get into the WXV season. But in terms of a target on their back, I think France knows. And I can't say whether that pressure is what's causing these disparate performances, but I am hoping that it continues, because we really want to see a much more competitive game than just Le Crunch every year.
Yeah, it really adds a level of intrigue to it. And then on Scotland, I'm going to ask you a question, and there is a right and wrong answer to this question. Are you a member of the Rachel Malcolm fan club?
I am so glad that somebody started saying that. I like to think I'm actually one of the founding members. In fact, before we came on, I went and digged it up. The first time that I found the word Malcolm in my tweets was 2022. So I can't really claim like total hipsterdom. But yes, I found several of my own tweets talking about how much I love her. And especially, as we'll be talking about, being a huge Wales fan, I am a fan of a kind of rock star captain, and Captain Dr. Rachel Malcolm is definitely the best captain in the Six Nations right now.
Agreed.
I wish she was ours.
I wish she was Wales men's.
I wish there was somebody who knew how to inspire like she does. I think it's definitely her and her personality. It doesn't hurt that she's also a machine, and I know your stats are showing the same thing, but I mean, there's a lot to say for somebody who has all that skill and all that charisma, and then also like goes out and smashes it every week. So yeah, big fan.
Yeah, go on, Holly.
I just want to point in, other than the fact that the one thing that bothers me with Rachel Malcolm is someone pointed out to me, if you could perfectly gender swap Jamie Ritchie, you get Rachel Malcolm, and I can't get that out of my head. So I thought she'd have to. Next time you watch her play, you'll see exactly what I mean. I mean, personally, I think that's a compliment to Jamie Ritchie that people think he could be.
Yes, that's a bigger compliment.
That's what I was going to say. Was come on, yeah. Doing our girl.
But
like
I said, I got it told from the reverse. One thing with France, do you think a bit of the issue is, you know, they've had a couple of key key players league. Obviously, Sansu's retired before the World
Cup.
That's
exactly
and,
what I was going to say.
The I name have the, 10 Jesse, has completely Jesse, slipped my mind.
Jesse Tremblay. Yeah.
I do wonder if that's I think that's I think that's sort of make sure, you know, in the same way that with the men's side losing Dupont and Untermack at the same at fairly similar time. As much as I love Callum Bourdon, Callum Bourdon Sansu says as she is, she has taken her wife's name as well.
Yeah,
I love the amount of couples in the Six Nations at the moment.
Oh no, I definitely love it, as I was talking about earlier about my rugby journey. Oh no, I love it. And I also love that Pauline Bourdon Sansu was talking about it as well, that like she was glad or that they made the timing the way that they did, just so that there weren't two Bourdon Sansus on the field at once. Although I guess as two scrum halves, that probably wouldn't have been a problem. But it does, of course, bring to mind the concern or excitement, depending on who you are, about perhaps two Joyce Butchers. But we'll see.
Yeah, yeah, it's possible. We'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Exactly.
Okay, and then on to the final game of the weekend, and it's three Wales fans here on the pod. Julie, when you watch the Red Roses, what's your approach to watching those games? Because unless it's New Zealand in New Zealand, you know they're going to win.
Absolutely. And again, that was pretty much the first line in my notes for this match. I mean, what do you say when you're watching the Roses? You more or less know what you're going to get. But you know what? The more I thought about it, I don't know if that's the case anymore. And we only have truly two matches to look at right now, neither of which we can say humbly, neither of which really challenged them that much. But the John Mitchell era is different. We've definitely seen a different idea in terms of who he fields and when, how he, I guess, approaches putting a team together versus the team that they're looking at least for me. When I was looking at the team sheets that they put out, it looked specifically like he picked a bunch of Gloucester people to upset all of the Gloucester girls at Wales. I think that's one way to look at it. In terms of the question of what do I think when I watch them, I like to think that they can't stay the behemoth forever. I've been wrong so far. I guess maybe it's something that's just hopeful. But like you said, we're three Wales fans here, and they are, if nothing else, plucky and ambitious. I think we did see that, which is giving us some hope. Wales also had a lot of people leave. We have younger folks coming in. Nobody can compare to the Red Roses in terms of the depth. And, you know, John Mitchell has said it tongue in cheek, but it's completely true. Like, he can put together three teams out of who he has just in that camp. It's intimidating to play them. Technically, Bristol was a home game for them. I'd argue that it almost wasn't, just because there are so many Bristol Bears on the Wales team, but it was England at home. It wasn't going to be easy. They knew that. And the result that we got, I think, showed that.
Bristol is basically in Wales. Like, if you
that's how I feel to, about it. That was why I picked Bristol as my team.
To get to Wales, a lot of people fly to Bristol and then drive.
It is quite a short drive. I go past Bristol twice a week, at least.
That was what everybody's been recommending me when I keep threatening to come for RWC 25. I'd really like to, but of course I want to see all my Welsh friends there. Like, it's really not that hard. Just fly into Bristol. You'll be fine.
Yeah, exactly. So on Wales then. So Harley, I messaged you when the team was announced, because I was quite surprised at the amount of rotation. And I was worried that this was Cunningham going, save the team for the next game. So Harley, what was your assessment on that? Was I proved wrong?
I think there were some changes which I think were to counteract some of the issues we had against Scotland. So I feel like Kate Williams and George Evans coming in, you know, that's just adds an extra physicality in both. And I think bringing Cecilia off the bench, I feel, was there to add a bit more of impact and drive. So you're not relying on Whittle and Pierce doing it for 70 odd minutes on her own when Cecilia comes off, because remember, she's still quite young, she's still developing as an individual, so you don't want to be absolutely slamming her 70 minutes, you know. She does tire out, so I think it gives you that there were some other changes. I think it was just, you know, we tried a couple of players, and they didn't. They had very shaky debuts, and so he fell back on more experienced fullback. Courtney Cox got a debut, but it wasn't meant to be Courtney. It's not Courtney Cox, is it? It's Bukka.
Courtney Cox is in Friends.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm got. That's why I'm questioning myself.
So actually, it's one of the rookies who was the fullback. It's Jenny Hesketh, from Bristol as well.
She's come. No, she's got less caps, but it was her debut on the week before.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but the point is, they've gone for someone who's actually had a couple, and then Kayleigh Powell. You know, the idea was going for someone who had a little bit more experience, you know. It's a similar way the Wales men are. We pick Sam Costello as the more experienced 10 than Ewan Lloyd, because Sam Costello has 7 caps, not 3, type thing.
It's interesting that you say that, though, because my other question, I was going to pose it to you guys, because it's something that I've been mulling over since the match. I feel that, and just because I've been watching a lot of the other media stuff that WRU have put out, but Ewan Cunningham loves to talk about rewarding work, which is great. People who are killing it at the gym, killing it in the practice pitch, that's great. One choice that I cannot seem to figure out, other than that he keeps saying that she has a great attitude, and it's nothing against her, Sean Jones has been doing great in the Celtic Challenge, absolutely. I found it curious that for this specific match, when Mo Hunt was starting, why wouldn't you throw in the one scrum half that really pisses her off? We know she loves to have a scrap with Kira. I wonder if maybe there was something going on with her. But again,
I think it's more to do with why he was putting Kira Bevan on the bench in like the World Cup in 2015.
Yeah.
It's to have that fantastic goal kicking and game control towards the end of the game. And also, I think,
absolutely,
with Kayleigh Powell, it's a more natural fit as well. So I think that's I thought Sean Jones actually had a fantastic, fantastic game.
Oh, she did, absolutely. The only reason I thought
definitely the
about
game
it was
of a two-cap international, but it was very good. And I do think her passing is a lot sharper than Kira Bevan's. Who Kira Bevan I love, because she is that Mike Phillips mold of, I'm just going to be a dickhead to the opposition, and I love it.
Exactly.
I have
she
a lot
annoys everybody. She's my favourite.
My favourite breed of scrum half are dickheads.
Yeah, shithousers. Yeah, we had her and Alcal. Imagine her and Alcal.
Basically, there's sixes who can pass, or sevens if you're of the South African numbering system.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you're absolutely right.
Go on.
Sorry.
No, go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, Sean Jones, and I didn't want to take away from that. She did have a great job. I looking at it from a different point of view, I was just thinking, that is trial by fire. It's Mo Hunt. That makes a lot of sense.
Another player who stood out on the Wales team was Alex Callender, Brisbane Thunder.
Always. Absolutely.
We're a fan of her.
Oh, big Alcal fan.
Love Alcal.
And in fact, you were singing her praises with just the pure stats. I mean, again, monster game on the level of Sam Monin. Monster game.
Yeah, she had a very, very good game in the first game against Scotland as well. I ended up picking the number 8 slipped my mind. Wales number 8.
Fionn Lewis.
No, Fionn Lewis is the other scrum half. Bethan Lewis, yeah.
Bethan Lewis, that's the one.
Bethan Lewis, yes.
This is the problem. Yes, bear in mind, this isn't just because it's the women's team. I just genuinely cannot keep names in my head.
Oh, no, I was going to say it's because it's Welsh. There are like 4 last names.
Yeah, that does not help.
You should listen to me talk about the Cardiff teams, and they're all Williamses. And I can't remember which Williams I need to talk about.
On the Ospreys, they got 2 Cameron Joneses.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think we have a record 5 Joneses in the extended squad this year.
That sounds pretty normal.
Wasn't the World Cup the first time Wales didn't have a Jones in their squad for, like, ever?
Yeah, I did a game with the men's regions of how few names can you get in your team. And I think with the Scarlets 15, I managed to get it down to 4 names. The whole 15. Anyway, that's
Owens,
an aside.
Jones, Evans.
Morgan's a big one. Everyone's
Morgan. Called... There we go.
Anyway, so there's a lot. I think a signal that the women's game is growing is the amount of doom and gloom that the Welsh apply to the men's game is now applying to the women's game as well.
I'm so glad you brought that up.
I'm kind of seeing all the people like, we're doomed, it's finished, we might as well all just give up now. I'm like, this is good. This is,
and I thought about it. Yeah, I thought fans of the men's game were like really big on, because you have so much more history. I thought in general they were really big on looking at trends. And if you look at trends, are you kidding me? Wales is on almost a steady trajectory up. Yeah, there have been a few dips, but the difference between now and, you know, 2018 is when I consider that I started becoming like a really big fan. It was like the golden era of Sean Lillecrap. I don't know what they're talking about. Let's see. The final score for Wales England was 10:46, which isn't the best. But if I were to look back historically, there have been so many shutouts that have been like 0:53. This is an improvement. I'm always curious what they mean by we're all doom and gloom when you lose one game and like a game to the Red Roses.
Is it? That's just how we're wired. Go on, Harley. You were going to come in there.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah. So it's a 20-point swing. You know, we saved one try, one more try, and we scored one more try than last time out. But I do feel like with all the hype and how, you know, big, particularly after on the back of a loss to Scotland, and it's the first time we lost to them in 20 years, and I said it last week, and I'll say it again, it does sound like deja vu to doing the men's cup. It's that knock, and I think it's just something to do about the Welsh mentality of, oh, it's all crap. Ever since, you know, you woke up, went down a mine, it was dark, you worked in the dark, you came up, it was dark, miserable.
Sometimes it's also raining. Exactly. Sometimes it's also raining, and sometimes it rains so much that it's a catastrophe.
I think that's just the way worldwide. And I do think there's some things where it's like, last year we had a really nice solid packed foundation, and it was great, we could go toe-to-toe with these teams. Like, I compared it to a lot of emerging tier two nations on the men's side of the game. And actually, I think that's almost how we have to look at the women's game, where basically England is tier one. So Dan on the, he does the Cardiff Rugby Life account, and he's joined on the Cardiff Central podcast, said, what we need a Super Six Nations, and it's just England, and they play no one until all of us are up to that level, so that we can just have a fair competition and someone else can win.
If they really want to so much, just keep playing the Black Ferns until somebody else gets good.
I'll be honest, I would watch England Reds
versus England Roses. Like, if they just split the team in half and did it that way, I'd watch that.
Yeah, and you can keep half the team like in New Zealand, so you can cut down on travel costs.
Yeah, we've solved it.
I love it.
We're always solving England's problems.
Yeah. So speaking of solving, I don't know if you call it problems now, but I want to talk about the PWR a bit. So, it's the foremost women's league in rugby at the moment, fully professional. Lots of players from other countries play there. Is it though the end game? Is the PWR going to last 100 years? Is it going to be, because again, you know, the international listeners, this will all laugh, but the furthest north team is Sale, which if you look at a map of England is only halfway up the country. So there's not that much representation in the league. Is the PWR, Julia, a stepping stone on the way to something else, or is this a thing?
Well, that is a good question. I would have a different answer before the EQP regulations came into effect. I'm curious to see if that hangs on. RFU have already kind of backpedaled on it, because it's resulted in things like the complete exodus of all Australian players. They all went back to Australia because the Super W is growing, and PWR said, you're gonna get less time playing here. Folks like us in America don't have a lot of other options, which is something in their plus column for now. But that said, France has started taking more people from more places than just Spain, Italy, and within France. Folks, you know, we were talking right before we started, Charlie Jacoby is an American. She's now playing in the Super W. That will probably open the door to more, because women's rugby is still so tight-knit. Players talk. A player that you really like playing with the Chiefs for one season, you'll you know, that happened here. Lori Kramer took Charlie Jacoby and they both went back to Super W for the Reds. Is it the best? Yes, in terms of competition, probably. But, you know, you look at the quality of gameplay at something like the Super W or Opiki in New Zealand, and, you know, that's easier to travel. You know, hopefully there aren't massive travel restrictions again in the near future. But barring that, in terms of growth, I think it's going to start to be, like we were talking about earlier, kind of an arms race. See who can build the biggest, baddest competition and who can attract the most talent. For now, it's PWR. I don't think that we should be so sure that it will be forever. It'd be great if we could get something here in America, but that's a pipe dream right now.
So Harley, from a outsider's point of view, in terms of being a Wales fan, we've had Celtic Challenge and we liked it. We wish it lasted longer and made more sense. and we'll talk about the format of women's rugby in a minute. But I'm going to say a word that none of us like. Anglo-Welsh. Should a Welsh team be looking to join the PWR, or should we be looking for a women's URC, which is heavily rumoured?
I think it's going to be one of those things. So one of the things I've always hoped with how fresh women's rugby is trying to be, and you know, and it's, you know, very social media heavy, and you know, it's got, you know, gets sponsored on TikTok. You know, they've moved the women's Six Nations to their own window. I say this again, I would like a week or two gap just so I can mentally recover from one to the other, because I'm still playing moments from the men's and or the under-20s and things like that. I think we've got to work out what necessarily is going to be best for us. Like, if we're going to have if we're going to have a Welsh, you know, a Welsh pro team, because at the moment, as I said, we've already alluded to, it's very heavy Gloucester, Hartbury, very, very Bristol. I mean, this plays everywhere. I mean, you know, like the backbone of Britain Thunder. You know, a lot of those were a very large cohort of Worcester players who, when that club unfortunately folded. You know, if we are going to do it, are we going to do it right? You know, we're currently complaining because WR, you can't fund the men pro teams. Funny, do we really want them in charge of a women's team right now? And then as for league, then again, it's going to have a look. And you know, Scotland have got a similar thing where it's like, do we make a team, or are we happy with our play? You know, our best players in the Premiership, and then we're using the Celtic Challenge as a development tool. Ireland, you know, and if we are going to have a URC type thing, Ireland have got to sort their shit out. Just well, the be all and end all is they have to sort their shit out.
Well, we say that, but the Wolfhounds did fine, and it honestly, I was looking at the ratings, and it kind of ended up being that all three nations had one really good team and one team, or I mean, you know, somebody always has to be at the bottom, so or a bottom.
Well, for
team.
Wales, it swapped halfway through. Gwalior started really well, and then Thunder finished really well.
I think the problem was, you know, the Gwalior Lightning had a few Loughborough players, and then Nick Gloucester had, they had Gloucester Hartbury players, and they basically got pulled into the Gloucester squad. So like now Metcalf had to start playing a few more games, and it, you know, that's a weird thing. But I said, remember, Ireland did really well because they have their whole core, basically just not the sevens players, because they are professionally contracted, not by Irish rugby, which is the only reason they actually tolerate them, as some of the Irish female, you know, Irish women people, you know, really into that, we'll tell you. But, you know, so it was great because they basically had their full national team against development squads. So, yes, it's going to be huge. I remember talking with Craig Manson on my own podcast about, like, Edinburgh were very lucky that a lot of the coaches were, like, part of the Edinburgh Uni setup, and that was a natural nucleus, you know. And, you know, so you got the Swansea University setup at, you know, it's probably the best university women setup in Wales, and they sort of helped with the setup of the Britain Thunder. So it's, yeah, I think the same. I know it's a very long way to say the league. It does, you know, if we're going to do a URC, we need everyone to be putting in. It's got to be the same. Whereas I think at the moment the PWR is the better option because it's already set up its own nucleus. I mean, if you're going to do that though, as soon as you've got more, you know, then the PWR understand the issue that URC have with things like salary caps. And, you know, if you are going to have teams set up in other countries, well, you know, £5 million will get you something very different in Wales than it will in London or in Scotland or in South Africa or certainly in Ireland, where, you know, like Dublin's actually, you know.
You kind of forget about that, don't we? If we had a women's URC, there would be a South African team in it. You kind of forget about that.
And actually, that would be quite good.
Very small.
I wonder if that's how it would go, though. It seems, at least from the folks who I know who have had any insight into any of this, is it sounds like the next closest thing would be kind of a URC sans South Africa. They don't have, you know, even if it wasn't impractical for all the same reasons it is for the men, there are the Bulls Daisies. That's the only pro team for women in South Africa. And of course, since they aren't playing against pro teams, it's super unbalanced. But in terms of kind of an expanded Celtic challenge, I don't know that much about administration, and that's really my weak point. But in terms of the best way to get more people in a pathway position playing games that will actually progress them, it kind of seems like if England is going to continue to push non-EQP folks out, or they'd like them to leave, why wouldn't that be? I'm actually just curious. I don't actually know. You do run into the same problem as you were saying about how Ireland has almost its entire national team at its disposal, and neither Wales nor Scotland do. But in the future, if they could make pro teams, although I have heard how WRU handles the men and the regions want them touching it.
All of the regions have said that they want a women's team.
All the regions do, and didn't it used to exist also in some sort of form?
I don't know, Harley, you might need to help me here. So Scarlets have got a women's under 18s team.
Yeah. We've all got an up to women's under 18. So obviously when on Scarlets Fever you're talking about the under 18 men's, you had the women's under 18s table looks very different in that. Actually, it's quite weird.
Yeah,
I think RGC ended up with two teams as opposed to with the men's under 18, where there's only the one, or vice versa. But and also the thing with the Irish rugby at the moment is they don't want to contract anyone outside of Dublin, and they only want to give them €15,000 for it, which will not do much.
We don't live in Dublin.
Really, it seems
doesn't get you a round of drinks in Temple Bar. Ask me how I know.
It seems in Ireland that they are. On purpose, just torpedoing every opportunity that the women have to rise. It's kind of frustrating. If they're not busy alienating their best players, they're busy saying you have to move from where you live and where your job is and come be in Dublin, and then also ask themselves, why are none of the AAL teams good? I think Ireland has, I worry that Ireland has more problems even than WRU, which is saying something, and definitely more problems than Scotland. Scotland seems like they're at least faking taking it seriously.
Yeah. At least going from Scotland's social media, you believe that they care.
Yeah.
The women seem happier there than they do at Wales or Ireland.
Yeah. There's a whole nother subject that you could do a whole podcast on, but.
Yep.
The barrier between the fans and the players in Wales is just stupid. But anyway, one Welsh woman who's doing very well this Six Nations tour I want to mention before I forget, Philippa Tuttiot's analysis of the plays that she's been posting on Twitter, and I assume she goes on TikTok and things as well. Absolutely fantastic. I watched those and I'm like, why aren't these done for the men's games?
What a huge get to get her as well. I mean, she's been fantastic at announcing for a while. I always tried to pick up anything that she's announcing on, but to have that level of analysis, I really wish, I wish she had the time and the money to do it more.
Yeah. And we've also got Lauren Jenkins as well, who is a journalist, not a presenter, and she is like so far ahead of everybody else in her field. Like, she does like touchline interviews for like the Welsh men's premiership on S4C, and I'm like, you should be hosting news night. Why are you doing this? Like, she, like, I don't know, Harley, if you got any thoughts on that side of
it. Maybe at some point I'll let you know some of the things that another of my co-hosts, Karen Harris, who's done a lot of work with BBC Sport, has about the situation there with Lauren Jenkins. All positive on behalf of her, but some of the other stuff got messy, a bit more of an issue. But yeah, I love Philippa Tuttiot, you know, like when she's commenting on sevens or URC level or internationals. It is so insightful, and it just shows that you can be really detailed, but very simple at the same time. So you can talk about all these complicated moves and what's good, but you'll say it in a way that, as someone who's watched a lot of rugby, I get what she's saying. And as someone I know, and my wife who's listened, doesn't really get more rugby, she understands. And it's, you know, and it's a very hard balance, but, and it's the enthusiasm as well. And, you know, like, and you think of some of the pundits on the men's game, and, you know, it's just moaning about the referee, or kicking, or it's all
sort of, the women who work in the women's game got their jobs on merit, and the men who work in the men's game got their job based on their name or that who they're mates with.
And most of those women had to prove themselves in usually ridiculous ways. And may I say, having Philippa, it's really nice to have even one announcer who can pronounce any of the Welsh names properly. It's really nice.
Yeah. I mean,
it's depressing the amount of native Welsh speakers as well on some of these things. And you're like, are you sure?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I watch some S4C stuff just because I want to make sure that I'm not saying anybody's names wrong. Turns out everybody else is saying the names wrong.
Yeah, everybody says it wrong.
Go and see anyway. One person who I do want to give credit for, because he does, or because he will come and ask. I don't know if he's ever asked you, Hugh, but again, he's brought up David Lawrence, so he'll be there and he'll be like, "Oh, how do you pronounce that?" I'll be, "Oh, I think it's Cummock," but you know, it's like my Welsh isn't brilliant, but I can sort of pronounce it. At least I get away with it because I'm from Barry, which is a very roughy, not very Welsh speaking area of Wales. So.
I can't remember why, but he asked me the difference between Geordie accents and Cumbrian accents. So I sent him clips of the Hairy Bikers. And I was like, it's this. And he was like, oh my God. He just like messaged me like 2 hours later, like, you can send me on the deepest rabbit hole, man. But anyway, need to move on, time permitting. So USA played South Africa in a friendly. I didn't watch it. Julia, what happened?
It was a great little match. There is footage if anybody would like to watch it. It's all up in full on the Springboks YouTube. It was a great game. Weather was great. The USA came out ahead. I really should have looked up the exact numbers for the score. They're both kind of a good preview. As you guys may cover later, we're coming up on the Pacific Four, which will be the USA, Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. That's kind of our Six Nations. It's looking good for the USA. We're glad to see them back together. As we were discussing before, it's got a lot of the same problems as, for example, the Italian team. Our team is scattered all over the planet. Like I said, we've got players now in Australia, a lot in England. It made sense to centralize everybody in Ealing. It's looking good. Unfortunately, while South Africa is developing at rapid pace, and they absolutely are, Lynn Cantwell is doing an amazing job as the high performance coach there. Still a bit behind, as I had mentioned earlier, there's only one nearly professional club team in South Africa, and most South African players do still play in South Africa. It's showing good progress. I'm interested to see how they go. It's almost certain that they'll be in WXV, so we'll definitely see them again. It'll all depend on where they place there. And from there, I hope people get jazzed to follow them. I mean, South Africa is the best men's team on the planet, according to numbers. There's no reason for South Africa to be so far behind.
Yes, I would like, especially because the money that South Africa men's is now finding itself having, I would like to see them spend some of that on the women's team.
And you know what? I really appreciate I will just say Sia Khaleesi has been one of the absolute best proponents. So big ups to him. I'm sure he's a fan of the pod. So if you're watching, Sia, thank you for shouting out the women. Please give them some of your a lot of money.
Yeah. He probably does listen. He'll probably DM me saying how wonderful I am.
He's probably gonna say something lovely to you.
Yeah.
Can you kick a puppy or something, just so I don't feel so terrible as a person?
Exactly. I feel so bad when I'm like, I don't really care about them. And then they're
Have you seen the clip of Razzie going, Sia Khaleesi is not the biggest thing in South Africa. South Africa is the biggest thing in South Africa. Like, all those clips from Razzie bollocking them. I love it. So.
Right, yeah, for the new Chasing the Sun.
I really want to talk about WXV more. We haven't got time tonight, so we'll have to do another pod in the future because there's a lot I've got to say about that competition. Before we move off South Africa, have we got a suggestion? Have we got an advancement on Ladybox that we can call the South African team, Julia? Because it's just called South Africa Women's, like not the Blitz Box, not the Baby Box. What?
I know that they're just the women box. It's just the women box all over the place. I've wondered the same thing, but I mean, if we're going by their domestic clubs, what they did with the Bulls was just the Bulls daisies, which, you know, and I'm sure culturally it works. I think
they do have a daisy on their logo, the Bulls, to be fair. I think that's
Okay. Then great. Then I love that. Can't be the Wales daffodils, but that'd be cool too. Anything?
Silly. So other rugby around the world, Super W Women. The W also stands for women, we have learned, so it's the Super Women Women. So good, they named it twice. Brumbies beat the Reds. Drewer are 2 from 3, which is cool. It's cool to see a Fijian team doing so well. I assume that's just the Fijian national team.
So I believe so, that it is, I think it's a lot of them, but some of the Fijian national team also plays in Opiki. At least the super good ones are. And then, of course, Fiji is one of the teams that still has to double dip a lot for their sevens and 15s program. Hopefully that won't be a problem anymore. They're getting more attention, if not funding, from Rugby Oceania. I don't remember which one is their territorial union, but there's that. And then there was Moana Pacifica, that was a bunch of, I think it was Samoa, Tonga, and Papua New Guinea, perhaps. They did a combined team that did some kind of exhibition stuff in pre-season for Super W. I'm not sure what they're planning on doing with that, but that team also did very well. So good signs for Fiji and Drua.
Interesting. So that's cool then. So so Drua beat the Force and Waratahs beat the Rebels. Super Rugby Aupiki, Matatu beats Hurricanes. I understand that Matatu haven't been doing that well this season up until now. I don't know the history of the league, I have to say.
I'm relatively sure they were the champions last season.
Yeah.
So that is something of note, if that's the case.
Okay. So they
I wish I could follow it more. It's just all the way across the world.
It is on, if anybody wants to watch it in the UK, it's on Sky in the morning. So when Super Rugby Men's is on, you can watch Super Rugby Women's as well, as an alternative. Sky do not promote rugby, so you have to know that it's on to know that it's on.
I was going to say, it would be great if anyone here was even advertising that they had this. As far as I know, I don't think I can watch Super W at all. I think you might be able to watch Opiki with a really expensive package from one of our cable providers. Mm. Yeah. Would love to follow it. If those guys are watching, please make it available in America.
I said he's going to come up again, but David Lawrence, he's been watching it, so ask him where he gets it. I don't know if he's watching it through Peacock or Flow Rugby or whatever.
I will definitely reach out. Excellent.
Excellent. So Matatu beat Hurricanes, Blues beat Chiefs in what was a double top of the table clash. Blues are now within 1 point of the Chiefs at the top of the standings. And that's all that I think there is to say about women's rugby that happened around the world this week. I think we will leave our rugby around the world wrap up for time reasons. TV guides, obviously Ender will post that. The big news from anybody who wants to know anything about watching rugby in the next month or so is that Viaplay, who was showing the URC and the top 14 and a couple of other bits and bobs as well, has gone out of business, and it will now be transitioning back to Premier Sports, and that's happening this month. So everyone keep an eye on your app and your subscriptions. If you're already subscribed to Viaplay, it will be transitioned over automatically, I believe. But yeah, just to let everyone know that that's happening. Keep an eye on Ender's at Rugby Broadcast Twitter page, and it'll all be there. Okay, so that just leaves me to say thank you to my two wonderful guests. Thank you, Harley, for stepping in last minute. Thank you, Julia, for enlightening us with all of your incredible knowledge. I've learned so much during this pod, so I really appreciate it. And I hope that your first time podcasting has been acceptable.
Thank you so much for having me, and definitely for your patience. I'm hoping I did it right.
You absolutely did it right. Okay, I hope everybody enjoys their week of rugby, and we shall speak to you all next week. Cheers, everybody.
They're out. Sports Social
Podcast Network. Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.